With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Batter up.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 136 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So this is the trade deadline extravaganza version of the podcast. Now, I feel like it would be more of an extravaganza if the Mets did more things, but we will cover the things that they did do, such as they are. We already discussed the Vogelbach-Holderman trade of last week.
Looking better every minute.
Right? Which, like, I know we discussed at the time that Colin Holderman was a rather, at least I thought, a large price to give up for Vogelbach, not knowing at the time that he wasn't even a rental. So now I kind of understand it more. But, I mean, Vogelbach, since he's become a Met, has raked. And I just saw Vogelbach's first home run as a Met in person, and it was a grand slam. And that was very fun. So that's already paid dividends for the Mets. We shall see if the other trades that they have done will pay dividends. One of them has not, but we'll get to that in a minute. So since the Vogelbach trade, I feel like we'll go like kind of in timeline order. So before the actual day of the trade deadline, but after the Vogelbach trade in that intervening week, the Mets acquired Tyler Naquin from the Reds, as well as left-handed relief pitcher Philip Dial. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I apologize, Philip. I will learn. But Tyler Naquin's the major piece in that trade that the Mets got. And that was essentially the replacement for Travis Jankowski on the roster as the sort of fourth outfielder type. In that trade, they traded outfielder Hector Rodriguez and right-handed pitcher Jose Acuña from the minor leagues. It's clearly an upgrade on Travis Jankowski as far as offense is concerned. Tyler Naquin looked good in this game that I was just at. He's hit a lot of balls hard. Actually, he hasn't gotten that many hits as a Met yet, but he's hit into a lot of hard outs and also gotten hits. He just looks obviously like more competent with the bat than Travis Jankowski ever did. So that's just a way to upgrade sort of the bench. I don't know. How do you guys feel about Tyler Naquin, New York Met so far?
I seem somehow fine. I don't know. The thought of having like a full opinion about him seems extreme, but like, yeah, no, he looks good. I mean, and it's a role that every team needs. It's not a sexy role. And he looks fine doing it. So thumbs up.
Yeah. My only thought is he looked like Jerry Blevins in the dugout, and I thought he was Jerry Blevins.
He does kind of have a little bit of a resemblance. That's true.
Put Jerry Blevins in the outfield, you cowards.
Oh my God. But that would take him out of his role in the booth, where I feel like he has provided a lot of value.
He is good.
He's a very good analyst. I really enjoy his work at SMY.
Yeah, he's been great.
So on the trade deadline day itself, the Mets made two moves. They acquired Darren Ruff from the Giants in exchange for who we're going to take a deep breath on this podcast, J.D. Davis.
I'm so sorry, Lynn.
It was a gapper to a shit week, so it was perfect.
Linda's in mourning. J.D. Davis, Thomas Sapucki, and then prospects Nick Zwack and Carson Seymour. This is the obviously like JD Davis replacement. They got Daniel Vogelbach as the Dom Smith replacement. DH has been a weakness for the Mets this year, as we pointed out on podcast many times. The intent of the Mets going into the season was kind of, well, Robinson Cano was also in the mix, but we won't talk about that. It was kind of most of the year supposed to be like a Dominic Smith, JD Davis sort of platoon situation. Both players have underperformed this year, so the Mets felt they needed to upgrade. Daniel Vogelbach clearly has already been an upgrade. We'll see what Darren Ruff provides. Vogelbach will be the long side of the platoon in the sense that he will get the most at-bats against right-handed pitching. He should never play against left-handed pitching. He's already taken a couple of at-bats in left against left-handed pitching in like not high-leverage situations, and whoo, they have not looked good. So, it's clear that he is exclusively to be used against right-handed pitching, whereas Dan Ruff is the opposite, to be exclusively used against left-handed pitching. In a vacuum, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know,
it's sexy again, but like it does it.
It does the job. They upgraded from what they had. It's fine. I don't have a problem. Unlike Linda, perhaps, I don't have a problem with what they gave up necessarily. Although I am told by people that know a lot more about prospects than I do that Carson Seymour is a guy. He's really the only guy that can, as far on the prospect side. Obviously, they've given up, like, you know, JD Davis, Holderman, a couple of guys on the major league side. But Carson Seymour is the only guy on the minor league side that I am told by people that know much more about this stuff than I do is can be described as a dude. I mean, Thomas Sapucki was once a dude, but I think is probably no longer a dude at this stage. We've already seen him once this year. He did not do well. I think that, you know, the Mets very soon prior to this trade, the Mets started pitching him out of the bullpen in Syracuse, Sapucki. And I think that is likely how he will be used by the Giants moving forward. Maybe he can make himself into a good relief arm. Lefties are always more valuable than righties. So if he can make himself into a useful lefty reliever, then God bless. I wish him the best of luck. So,
yeah.
Nick Swack is a guy who was like sort of he was a senior sign. He's old for his level. He's like 26 years old, I think, at this point, which old LOL.
He basically would have been Juan Soto's babysitter.
Yeah. Has shown flashes that people are excited about, but like was never had any sort of like pedigree. So I think that, you know, that is what it is. So to me, it's a bit of an overpay for literally Darren Ruff, but
like it's not anybody. Find these dudes anywhere, and that's what it took to get this random ass 36-year-old.
I mean, I think
platoon player.
I mean, I think if you could get him anywhere, they would have. And it's,
I don't know.
I
just feel like they didn't try very hard.
I think it's not a, like, in terms of looking at the situation and identifying that, like, there's an opportunity for a very productive platoon at DH, that to me makes more sense than, like, splurging on some other, you know, individual who could fill that role. Like, it's not, I would love one DH, but for two DHs, like, they're both good at what they do. It does seem like an overpay for Darren Ruff, but also like he's a pretty significant upgrade from that left side, you know, against lefties. And like, I'll take it. You know, I think on the offense side, you know, I wish they weren't still stuck with big old nothing at catcher, but I feel like they had a huge DH problem and that is largely filled.
But yeah, they solidified their floor. They got yes. some mop and glow. They, you know, shine the floor, but it's still the floor. They did nothing to raise their ceiling.
Yes, that's
and correct. You still get walked on the floor. That's yes. what's going to happen.
Yes. And I think that that's the extent of it, or that's the essence of it, right? Is that like, yes, what the moves that they did do are fine, but they didn't do enough of them. Like, they could have gotten a way better upgrade. They could have gotten Wilson Contreras. They could have gotten JD Martinez, and potentially in addition to JD Martinez, or instead of, like, either one or the other or both. They were talking to the Red Sox about JD Martinez and Christian Vasquez, their Boston's catcher. And I think that's just like, in I feel like early in the deadline, there was talk about Juan Soto and Shohei Ohtani. Later in the deadline, there was talk about Wilson Contreras and David Robertson, and then Christian Vasquez and JD Martinez. And then they ultimately got Darren Ruff and Mykal Givens. I just feel like the expectation kept lowering at every step. And it was like, come on.
Well, and Givens kind of seems like an, we didn't get a reliever. So quick, somebody get somebody in with a minute to go. He's not available. Okay.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I can buy this, that there just wasn't anyone in the system that the Cubs liked that was the right kind of region that they were working with. Like, I can believe that Robertson just wasn't in the cards. But they'd been talking to the Cubs for a while, and it's really disconcerting that they got that close to the deadline and never had any reasonable backup plan. Because to me, I was seeing, you know, we saw like Vogelbach and then Darren Ruff comes in, and I was thinking like, oh, well, that's not exactly what I was hoping for on offense, but it'll do. They must be saving their cards for the pitching. And then it just didn't come together.
Well, and like, Epler was saying, oh, the price was too high or whatever. There is no price. This is, you're going for a World Series. There is no price. You should be willing to pay anything. Mark Vientos has no future in this organization. Ronnie Mauricio has no future in this organization. They're blocked. So what are you holding them for?
Yeah, it's just, it's very frustrating. It's like the Mets, like, are being precious about, like, Mark Vientos, where it's like, I feel like they've been leaking this whole time that, like, that the price is too high, and we're not willing to part with prized prospect Mark Vientos. And it's like, you're being so transparent about, like, this being like a leverage play in the media. Like, if Mark Vientos was really that good, guess who'd be DHing for the Mets right now? Mark Vientos.
Well, I look at people at like Mark Vientos, and I feel like that if the Cubs had been looking for a bat instead of pitching, that would have gotten it done. I feel like, and maybe I'm being too generous in my assessment of that one situation, just because of the various like reports coming about. But I do feel like if the Cubs had been looking for a different kind of player, it would have been fine. But nonetheless, I mean, my problem comes down to the fact that like, okay, so there wasn't a match with the Cubs. There are 28 other teams and half of them were looking to get rid of pitching. So how did they not have the time to find one other team that would accept a slight overpay on a position player in exchange for a good reliever? I mean, that I just feel like they ran out of time, and there's no excuse for that.
There really isn't. And
there's
like,
no excuse for any of that. Like, how did you let David Robertson go to the Phillies for a nothing prospect?
For their 26th best prospect. Now, people who, like, you can just look at lists. And if you're like me, I'm not speaking for anybody else on this podcast. I'm speaking for me. If you're just like talking about me, a person who just like looks at these lists, like, I have no context for a lot of it. So if you look at like the Phillies 26th best prospect, like, I don't know what that means other than like, it seems bad that the Mets couldn't top that. Talking to people who know more about this than I do, like, he was a riser in the system. And if you ranked those prospects today, would have been a lot higher than 26, but still, like, we're not talking about the level of prospect that the Mets were apparently being very precious about. We're not talking about the level of like Mark Vientos, Ronnie Mauricio, like top five prospects in the system that the Mets were seemingly unwilling to part with for rentals. We're not talking about that level. Maybe we're talking about, I don't know, Kelvin Ziegler or whoever, like, I don't know. I don't know enough about the Mets system to like make a comparison to what this Phillies prospect ended up being. But to me, it really seemed like you really could have gotten that done. I buy that maybe they couldn't have gotten Contreras done without a guy they weren't willing to part with because Contreras didn't end up getting traded to anyone. So fine. But David Robertson did get traded, and it wasn't for like a world beating prospect by any stretch of the imagination. Syndergaard got traded for a lot better than Robertson did. The Phillies had a lot better of a deadline than the Mets had. Let's be real about it. They got Noah Syndergaard. They got David Robertson. The Braves also improved, and they extended Austin Riley. So, you know, it's just, I guess we should cover like the move that the Mets did do in addition to Darren Ruff. We referenced it, but the Mets did at the last minute acquire Mykel Givens from the Cubs in exchange for righty Saul Gonzalez. And again, this is like not a big return for Mykel Givens, so it's fine. The Mets didn't have to part with any of their precious prospects that they are hugging so hard. And Givens,
I mean, they certainly could have done both. Yeah. Gotten Givens and a real reliever. Sorry, Givens.
Exactly.
Like, and he's not even a lefty. They're one need.
Just like Darren Ruff, I do not actually have a problem with this deal. They didn't give up much in it. I don't have a problem with acquiring Mykel Givens, despite the fact that I just watched him pitch very poorly in his first Mets outing. But we'll cast that aside. He's had a very good year. He has a 2.66 ERA and 40 and two thirds innings pitched this year for the Cubs. Fine. That's perfectly serviceable. He can be among the, like, he's probably an upgrade on the Steven Nogaseks, the Tommy Hunters, the Yoan Lopez's, the Adonis Medina's, insert up and down guy here. He is probably an improvement on those guys. That's perfectly fine. And they didn't have to give up much to get him. But they didn't get a lefty, and they didn't get anybody else, not just a lefty, but anybody else. They needed two bullpen arms, and one of them should have been a lefty. And instead they got one who wasn't a lefty.
And has terrible splits against lefties.
Right. Right. Like, jeez, like Andrew Chapin was
a good
right
overall
there.
Pitcher. He's bad against lefties.
Like,
they knew the whole time that was what they needed the most.
There was,
they realized time. Like, crap, we need to get somebody who's available, and the Cubs probably just said, here, take them.
There was a flurry of tweets from Mets beat writers at like 5:45 p.m. Eastern being like, the Mets are working on, you know, getting a left-handed reliever. And they had, and this was before 5:45 p.m., but they had leaked earlier, like maybe like half an hour before that, like, oh, suddenly, you know, they had been leaking the whole week. Mets are not trading top prospects. Mets are not trading top prospects. Prices are too high. We won't do it. And then all of a sudden it was like, Mets are willing to talk about Ronnie Mauricio. It's like, great. Okay, great. Awesome. Do it. Fine. Whatever. And then like 5:45 p.m., it's like the Mets are working on a lefty. And I'm like, okay, they're going to get Givens and a lefty. And then I can at least feel fine about this deadline. Because if they get like Givens and Chafin, that's fine. And they can give up Mauricio for Chafin, whatever. And then all of a sudden it was just like, nope, they're done. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Well, their argument was because they didn't want to get like, give up like a Pete Crow Armstrong of last year. That trade worked out. That trade was a good trade. They didn't do enough last year. That was the problem. But right. The trade itself was not a bad trade. They're still getting value out of it in Trevor Williams.
Exactly. Like, that's the thing that people keep forgetting. I mean, like Pete Crow Armstrong is a top prospect in the Cubs system now. And they may end up, I'm not saying that's currently true, they may end up regretting him more than Kelenic, in the sense that if he becomes a real guy, then sure. But he hasn't taken a major league at bat yet. And B, the Mets didn't only get Javi Baez in that trade. They got Trevor Williams as well. And where would the Mets be this year without Trevor Williams? They would be pretty screwed. Let's be real about that. Javi Baez
was good last year. It wasn't his fault they missed the playoffs. It was because they didn't do enough at the deadline.
They got the return that they were asking for that Pete Crow Armstrong trade. It just didn't get them to the playoffs. So it probably wasn't worth it because the 2021 Mets didn't make a playoff run. And the idea of getting Baez and Williams was that they would make a playoff run. But that's not the fault of those players that they got in that trade, who have both been good for the Mets. So I don't know. Like, I get being like gun shy about it because you got pantsed last time a little bit, but like, are you trying to win the World Series or not? I'm sorry. And like
Jake's opting out. He's Scherzer's not getting younger. This might be your only year that you have the both of them.
Well, that's what, and you know, and I'm always like, I'm willing to entertain the possibility that teams treat the Mets differently than other teams. It doesn't, I'm not buying wholesale into that, but it's something I'm willing to consider. But then Billy Epler opens his mouth and all that comes out of it is this finance bro bullshit. And it just seems to totally miss the point. You know, he's talking about like, oh, well, it's about, you know, it's a 1% upgrade this year and then a 1.5%. But this year is not future years. As of right now, the Mets have a way, 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 way higher chance of winning a title than in any of those other years. And when they're as close as they are, those marginal wins actually count for a lot.
Yeah.
It's the difference between a wild card and a division spot. Yeah. It's the difference between a bye week, you know, a series bye and not a series. Like all of these little tweaks, when you are like on the verge of a huge season, it does matter.
And I'm just wondering,
to, like, if there are 82 wins in 3 years, one win isn't going to move the needle on that.
I was having literally this exact discussion with a person in the Amazing Avenue comments recently. And like, I'm wondering if Billy Epler has ever taken a statistics class in his life, because he's talking about, oh, a 1% increase in the World Series odds or whatever. Sure, he's probably right about that. Like, whatever upgrades that the Mets could have gotten at the deadline might only increase their Fangraphs World Series odds that we were talking about, you know, recently on the podcast by 1% or so, which when you take in a vacuum doesn't sound like a lot. But if you've ever taken a statistics class, you'll know that the range there is like 0 to 18%. No one's above 25% in World Series odds. It's not like the range here is 0 to 100%. And you're talking about raising those odds 1% within that range. You're talking about raising the World Series odds 1% between a 0 and 17 to 18% range. That gets you from being like maybe the third most likely team to win the World Series to the most likely team to win the World Series.
Well, and also it's the difference between, and this is, I'm about to get real like inside baseball on this one, but like it's a 1 percentage point increase.
Yeah.
Whereas like if their original odds were 10%, then it would act and moving up to 11%, then that's actually a 10% increase in the odds.
Right. But, like, exactly. Exactly.
It all comes down to this, like, again, this sort of business school kind of talk that just treats the game like something where you can just eke out a little extra profit here and there, and it's all the same dollars in your pocket at the end. And it doesn't work that way. There's so much uncertainty in baseball that to be on the verge of a season like this, you have to take full advantage of that moment. It's, you know, and if I would say like, if they're the Dodgers and they're here every year, then maybe it doesn't matter as much, but also look at the Dodgers. They are always acquiring guys at the deadline. Always, always.
And they have the better system to deal from though.
This is true.
Well, even the Yankees too, they were like, they're at least a million games in first place and they even went harder than the Mets.
I mean, that's what you have to do. That's how you win baseball games. Like, you go really hard.
Yeah, the Mets played this I don't have any issues with the moves they did make, but the Mets went too conservative at this deadline, period. Mm-hmm. They went too conservative at this deadline. They needed bare minimum to make me feel okay, fine about this deadline. They needed another bullpen piece, preferably a left-handed pitcher, and they did not do that. And they upgraded their offense, yes, fine, but they could have upgraded it more for probably not that much. Now, Wilson Contreras might have cost too much, but I don't buy that JD Martinez was too costly for them. I simply don't buy that. I don't. They were leaking that the Red Sox were interested in Dominic Smith and all this stuff. Like, Dominic Smith has no future on this roster. Trade them Dominic Smith and like one prospect.
He's on the roster when he comes off the IL right now.
He's going to get sent down to AAA when he comes off the IL. Like, come on, man. I don't buy it. I think the thing that makes this even more infuriating from like what Billy Epler has said perspective is not just like the business bro quotes he is giving, but also the fact that when he made the Vogelbach trade and everyone kind of freaked out about him including Holderman in that trade, he said, listen, I didn't want to include Holderman in that trade, but I felt like I had to because the relief market is hotter than the bat market. And I think that the relief market will be an easier play than getting a bat. And so I felt like I had to jump on getting the bat right away and I can get a reliever. And then he just didn't do enough to improve the bullpen. You can't say that. You can't say, oh, I had to trade Colin Holderman because the relief market's going to play out for us. And I was scared about missing out on a bat. So I had to jump on the bat and trade Colin Holderman. So and later I'll do the relievers and then not sufficiently improve the bullpen. You can't say that.
Well, and also, you know, what message is it sending to the clubhouse, too? Like, you know, I remember Keith and Ron saying this when they got Cespedes. They're like, the front office is sending you a message that we believe in you. We're all in. We're behind you. And, you know, let's all do this together. What message is this sending? You're on your own? You're not worth giving up Mark Vientos for?
Yeah,
like, the bullpen thing.
That's the message you sent to this clubhouse.
The bullpen is one of those things that comes up so big in October, and they're just here like praying that David Peterson settles into it. And I guess Tyler McGill.
I was going to say calling Tyler McGill an automatic option out of the bullpen when he hasn't thrown a single pitch in relief.
And
we don't even know he's healthy.
They are a good team. Like all
they're very good.
Pulled off. It wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, I hate the idea of rewarding bad choices, you know, and I don't get me wrong. Like, I want all this to work. But really, like, it just there had to be a better way.
So when like, Soto comes up in the NLCS, you're going to David Peterson in that situation?
That's literally you. It's either David Peterson or Joely Rodriguez. Those are your choices. Good luck with that.
And then they bring in Josh Hader. So then what are you going to do? Bunt with Tomas Nito?
They seem to be okay with bunting with Tomas Nito.
that seems to be the plan. Juan Soto will probably hit a bomb off Peterson, and then the next inning, Tomas Nito has to bunt.
A lot of the people that were getting, like, you know, all uppity about people who were upset about this trading deadline were all like, oh, you're being so doom and gloom. The Mets are really good. Look at their great record. And I'm like, that's exactly why I'm upset, you guys. Because the Mets are such a damn good baseball team, they have a chance to win the World Series this year, because this is the best Mets team I've seen in a really goddamn long time. And I want to win it all. And to go half ass on this makes it all the more frustrating. Makes it all the more frustrating.
Everybody else got better. Now they're not good enough.
Well, and
MLB is not going to fly forever. Good for you.
The reason that they had such a big need in the bullpen was because they half-assed the bullpen in the offseason too. Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't seem to value that as an organization. We've said it over and over. They just don't seem to value either like signing relievers to big contracts or like trading big pieces for bullpen rentals. They just don't seem to value the bullpen as an important asset of a team. And I think that that is a huge misunderstanding of what playoff baseball is about. Huge misunderstanding of it.
And I think, you know, they're still a good team. They're the best team since 2006, and it's not close. And they're almost certainly going to make it to the postseason. Probably 50-50 going to win the division. I mean, I think that's all, you know, we can and should feel happy about where this team is. But we should also be disappointed that they didn't work harder at it, and also be concerned about what comes next, because, you know, it's not going to get any easier.
I think this is still the best team in the NL East. I mean, obviously we have a big 5-game series against the Braves coming up. We'll see how that pans out in the end. I still think that they're going to win the division, more likely than not, but this is about building a team to win the World Series. This is not just about building a team to make the playoffs. This is about building a team to be successful in the playoffs. And I think the Mets have fallen short of that. Now, can they win the World Series anyway? Sure. worse teams have won the World Series than this team.
Cardinals.
2019 Nationals. But it's about making your odds as good as possible. And the Mets just simply didn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, they made the Padres, it harder on themselves. Literally everybody.
Yeah. It's just, it's
very. And like now the lines are out the door because Soto was making his debut today. There's no excitement around there. That's not the Mets.
Linda, the Mets made a big trade deadline acquisition and his name is Jacob DeGrom.
And Trevor May.
And Trevor May. And James McCann. Can't forget about James McCann.
And James McCann.
No matter how much we try.
Listen, I mean, all these things that people are saying, because like that line has been repeated over and over. Let's not just talk about what Billy Epler is saying to the media and things like that. Let's talk about how the vast majority of Mets media and baseball media are carrying water and regurgitating these lines that Jacob DeGrom is just like a trade deadline acquisition. It was literally a meme and they just regurgitated that line at face value. Credit to Tim Britton of The Athletic, by the way, because he wrote a piece that basically was very critical and said that the Mets were too conservative at the deadline. So thank you, Tim. Thank you for at least one
John
reporter
Heyman
being
did today too, and I don't want to give John Heyman credit.
But thank you to anyone being honest about this.
The Mets, you know, he is a spectacular addition to the team, and the Mets are incredibly lucky to have him because really, like, he is, though not a trade acquisition, the only reason they are still the best team in the NL East. Because yes, at this point, if he hadn't been coming back, then I would be deeply wondering how much longer they were going to be in that position in the division, because I don't think it's especially close if they didn't get that shot in the arm. But that still doesn't excuse just sleeping on it.
And I mean, like,
if you want to talk about it in deadline terms, like they all seem to be dying to do, Jacob DeGrom is a trade deadline acquisition. He's a rental then, because he's kind of opt out. So all the more reason to invest in this team now, this team this year, because this might be the last year of Jacob DeGrom. So you better freaking, like, win it now. I hope they win this year, because otherwise they are pretty screwed. Now, I mean, on the bright side, Jacob DeGrom did return. The Mets lost the game because of their bullpen and also because they didn't score off of literally a rookie. But Jacob DeGrom, on the bright side, looked healthy and he looked good. So that,
really,
God bless. Like, that was the biggest victory of all. That was a bigger victory than either of the actual victories they had in that Nats series, was that Jacob DeGrom looked good and healthy. So that's just an excellent sign, and so great to see. The vibes in the ballpark for at least the first five innings of that game before things went epically south were out of control. Just like, people were standing at every pitch. Like, just, it was so great. And he was throwing 102, and it was just like, oh my
God. I don't know, Allison, you may have missed this being in the ballpark, but SNY didn't cut to commercial.
Wow. That's so cool.
It was amazing. It was really, as soon as I realized they were doing it, I was like, damn, they know how to take a moment, and how lucky are we to have that production team. But
just,
yeah, no, so they just
broadcast.
So it just stayed on him as he took the mound and, like, you know, panned through the crowd, and that was such an incredible moment. And I'm so grateful that we got to really, really sit back and enjoy it, because the people who run those broadcasts in SNY love baseball, and it really shows.
Know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. And it was just, it was so good to see him back. It was just like, it was like a breath of fresh air. It was like, this is what this feels like. I had forgotten what this felt like with Jacob DeGrom on the mound, just knowing that you were going to see something amazing. It was just, it was so good. So
I didn't watch.
Having that moving forward is a priority. And I know that people were upset that he didn't, that he came out after the fifth inning, even though he threw 50 something pitches or whatever, but you have to prioritize him being healthy for the postseason. You just can't, you can't risk that. So I'm fine with it.
I was too much in a mood and didn't watch. Not even Jacob DeGrom could save me.
But this series, I mean, underrated compared to Jacob DeGrom. But this series also saw the return of Trevor May literally today, Wednesday. So Trevor May pitched his first inning back with the Mets. He looked good. I was nervous about it because, so I don't know if the broadcast covered this, and I think they talked about it with him after the game, but oh my goodness gracious, was I terrified, because the stadium gun at Nats Park was clocking 87 to 88 mile an hour fastballs for like that whole inning. And I was I was like, is Trevor May throwing 88? That is not good. And then I like frantically messaged Amazing Avenue Slack and was like, are these fastballs or are they changeups? And Brian was like, they're changeups. And I was like, the stadium gun has them as fastballs. And apparently they asked him about it after the game, and apparently he was working on his changeup during this like first outing. And like, he, because the thing that made me nervous that they were actually fastballs after all is that he threw them over and over and over. He threw like maybe two actual fastballs the entire inning, and they were like 95, but it was just over and over, like 87, 88, 87, 88. And I was like, I don't like this at all. I mean, he looked fine. Like, he struck dudes out. Like, it was fine. But after the game, he was like, yeah, I wanted to like scream. I wanted to step off and scream, they're changeups.
I guess that is the nice thing about getting back to the majors in a blowout situation. So
yeah. Yeah. Michael and I disagreed with this. Like, when I saw Trevor May coming in, I was like excited, obviously, because it was nice to like see Trevor May's return in a Mets uniform since he's been out for so long. But I was like, are you really wasting Trevor May's bullets in this, like, you know, 8-0 game? And Michael was like, might as well treat it like another rehab start. Like, you're facing the literal Nationals without Juan Soto or Josh Bell. So that's basically like facing a AAA team. And I was like, fine. But I just feel like it was, you know, I'd rather save his bullets for a higher leverage situation, but it's fine. He looked good. And I hope that
I felt much better about it. Until Givens almost blew the whole fucking thing. Oh, and God, they had to get Lugo up in what had been a 9-run game. Like, that's
awful.
Not how you want to start your career.
I'm just hoping that it's because Givens took like the red eye or something. It was not at his sharpest. Listen, he has a 2.66. He had a 2.66 ERA heading into this outing for the Cubs. But it was like a 4-point-something FIP. So take that for what it's worth. He might be getting a little lucky. I don't think that that doesn't mean that I think he sucks and that he's the pitcher that we saw today. He's probably something in between what his ERA says and what we saw today. He is another entry.
Addison Reed, which is what I think we were really hoping for.
Exactly. Like, to continue the 2015 analogy, the Mets did the Juan Uribe and Kelly Johnson trades, but they didn't do the Cespedes and Reed trades.
What do they do if Edwin Diaz gets hurt?
Oh my God.
Why would you say that?
I'm just saying bullpen.
To be fair, I think they would be pretty screwed no matter what. That's a really, really hard thing to come back from.
That's like the same thing like when Jacob DeGrom got hurt. Like, what are you going to do? Like, you can't replace, you can't replace Jacob DeGrom. You just can't. And you can't replace Edwin Diaz. You just can't. But
you just have to hope.
The Mets did get Max Scherzer as like a second ace. And so they were able to weather this storm for the most part. And they could have done the same thing in the event of an Edwin Diaz injury, God forbid, if they had gotten David Robertson. Is it a massive downgrade over what they had? Yeah. But is it as big of a downgrade as like Seth Lugo closer or Adam Ottavino closer? Yeah. Like,
or even like not. Maybe not even an injury. Like, you're playing a 5-game series with the Braves. There's a doubleheader in there. Edwin Diaz probably is going to be used. What if he's not available one game? Who do you go to then?
Ottavino. I mean, Ottavino is the clear setup man in this bullpen and is the clear closer in the event that Edwin Diaz is unavailable. Like he's been unhittable. Like Ottavino's been very, very good. He's got like a 0.8 ERA in like the past like 30 innings or something. Unreal.
Yeah, he just looks fantastic and has just like gotten better as the season has worn on.
And the Mets have been really lucky that he has.
Yeah, right. But I also think it's what's nice to see is that I think as much as like individual decisions are sometimes head scratchers, I feel like Buck has a long game in all this.
He does,
and
for sure.
When I think about Ottavino, like my first thought is not, oh my God, his arm is gonna fall off. Like yeah. I think he's getting plenty of opportunities, but it doesn't scare me that one of those guys is just going to get driven into the ground. And that is also really important looking towards October.
Exactly. As infuriating as it can be on an individual game level, for example, in a 1-1 game, when Jacob DeGrom pitched, the Mets brought in Steven Nogasek and then they brought in.
How did that go, Allison?
It went poorly. Let me just tell you.
They ask, where was Trevor Williams? He's your long dude. Why wasn't he in the game? Yeah,
I don't know. The Mets brought in Steven Nogasek and Yoan Lopez. I think, and to go back to the point about like, you know, load management. Now, I'm not worried about Trevor Williams' load management necessarily because Trevor Williams is the long man. He doesn't pitch that often, but he pitches multiple innings when he does pitch. The whole reason that Buck brought in Steven Nogasek and Yoan Lopez into that game yesterday was because he knew they weren't going to be on the roster after the trade deadline. So he used those guys in a high leverage situation, which was not the best managerial move, but it's the best move if you're thinking about the long game, because he knew he was just going to burn those guys because they were just going to be off the 26 man roster after that. That's what he did. He blew a game on purpose. So you can be mad at him for that. I was pretty mad as a person who was in attendance at that game. I was pretty mad about it, but that's what he's doing here. He's playing the long game. He blew a game on purpose to play the long game because he used two arms he knew were going to be gone instead of Trevor Williams, who is going to still be on the roster.
Okay. Say, how often are you really going to turn to Trevor Williams? He's your long man.
To be such a good opportunity to use him, but and it had been a little while.
Yeah, he pitched the eighth, I think, like a week or so ago.
Yeah, he was the LOL setup man in one of the Marlins. Yeah,
no, after Peterson blew it against the Yankees, and they tried Williams the next day.
I snarked about him coming in that situation. Then he looked fantastic, and I'm like, all right,
great. He was great.
Yeah, no, make me look stupid. I love it.
Yeah, I agree that Williams should have pitched. And honestly, if not Williams, then I think actually like they ended up bringing in Tommy Hunter eventually. But I actually think Tommy Hunter should have probably pitched instead of Nogasek or Yoan Lopez. But those were the guys Buck pitched because those were the guys he knew were going to be off the roster. And lo and behold, they are off the roster now. But nonetheless, despite that embarrassing loss to the Nationals, which shouldn't have happened, the Mets did rip off a 7-game winning streak before losing that game. And then they won today, and the Braves lost today to the Phillies. God bless.
Oh, I missed that they lost.
Yes, they did lose. Nick Castellanos hit a 2-run homer. So that did happen. Nick Castellanos has been very underwhelming for the Phillies, but at least he came through in this situation against the Braves. So the Mets are currently 3.5 games up on the Braves in the NL East as we speak, as we record this on Wednesday night, heading into the essential 5-game series that they now have with them this week.
No pressure, guys.
Yeah, that's going to be a hell of a series. It's going to be a hell of a series. I will be at one of the
hell
games.
Hell is a great way to play. What's that?
So yeah, that's the situation the Mets are in. We're in for a race. The Mets didn't do enough with the trading deadline, but hopefully it won't matter.
I mean, maybe they'll lose and then next year, like it'll be a Steven Matz's agent situation where Cohen will get so mad that he'll just sign Judge, trade for Otani.
Maybe, but I don't want to play Steven Matz's agent with the whole season.
I know. I'm playing the long game.
whatever.
Yeah, because that means I have to re-sign DeGrom and Diaz too.
Yeah. But for our baseball segment this week, we are going to talk about, first, before we get to the other half of the baseball segment, we're going to talk about other notable trades around baseball. We alluded to some of them. We talked about the, I guess we'll cover the NL East, the other NL East, contending NL East teams first. We alluded to the fact that the Phillies and the Braves both probably had a better deadline than the Mets, mostly the Phillies, who arguably had like one of the best deadlines of any team.
Yeah, people too are like, oh, the Mets are still way up in the division. That's because the Phillies were bad. The Phillies aren't bad anymore.
I hope that they're still
bad. It's a good thing
bad,
the Mets got all their games with the Phillies out of the way, or like almost all of them.
Yeah, they did play the Phillies a lot early and don't play them a lot more. But they do play them some. The Phillies acquired David Robertson, who was a Mets trade target. And they did acquire also Noah Syndergaard. So Noah Syndergaard in a Phillies uniform is going to be extremely strange. And they also acquired Edmundo Sosa from the Cardinals, and they acquired Brandon Marsh from the Angels. So they had themselves a pretty decent deadline. They netted four players, and that's pretty darn good. The Braves
Bryce Harper going to be their addition at the deadline?
I mean, Bryce Harper, in theory, is going to return at some point, which will make that lineup pretty scary.
And the downside for all of these players is that they are actually all Phillies now. So, you know, it could go anyway.
Yeah. The Braves got Robbie Grossman, who was also actually a Mets trade target. The Mets, like, Robbie Grossman would have been like the thing they did instead of Tyler Naquin, but they did Tyler Naquin. The Braves got Robbie Grossman, a closer Rossiel Iglesias, and starter Jake Odorizzi. But they did trade away a rather like sizable bullpen piece in Will Smith to get Jake Odorizzi. So there's that. But they also acquired Ihiri Adrianza, and they DFA'd Robinson Cano, by the way, when they made all these roster additions. So LOL, he got like four hits for the Braves and like three of them were against the Mets. But the major thing that the Braves did actually was not a trade. They extended star third baseman Austin Riley for like $210 million or something like that. You know, as the Braves seem to always do, they extended one of their stars for like way under market rate. So it's like good for them.
Be a pain in our ass for the next 10 years.
Yep. So both of the Phillies and the Braves improved a great deal. Obviously, the most notable trade of this entire deadline, more so than any trade of any NL East team, although it was a trade away from an NL East team, was that Juan Soto, national superstar, got traded away along with Josh Bell to the Padres for a package of eight players.
I mean, that's got to be that has to be the biggest deadline trade ever.
Of all time. Yeah. The biggest trade in baseball history, basically, as far as like the size of the return. Yeah.
Yeah. And still not enough.
It's still not enough.
There's nothing that will ever be enough, I don't think.
There's nothing that will be enough.
I was like, the only player you could trade for Juan Soto would be Juan Soto.
Literally Juan Soto. A funny wrinkle that happened during that was that Eric Hosmer was originally in the package back to the Nationals because the Padres, in order to take on the money of Soto and Bell, wanted to trade away money to stay under the luxury tax. But Eric Hosmer went full troll mode that I respect so much and exercised his no trade clause. Which
almost, why didn't they check on that before they
I don't
him?
Know.
Yeah, that's the main like, what were they thinking?
I don't know why they didn't check, but I'm so happy they didn't because it was incredible content.
It really looked for a second there like something, like it wasn't something he could come back from.
Like that he had killed the whole deal, yes.
Which would have been like not just a great troll move. That, you know, we're talking about like the biggest trade ever. It would have been the biggest troll move ever.
It would have been insane.
It would have been hilarious because the Padres traded for Scherzer last year before Phil threw and he went to the Dodgers.
Yep.
So it would have been that all over
Literally
again.
Would have been the same thing all over again, which would have been so funny, but it didn't end up coming to pass. I mean, Hosmer was not part of the package because he couldn't be. But instead he was like panic traded to the Red Sox to offload his money. And then Luke Voit instead was the major league player sent back to the Nationals because the Nationals needed a first baseman to replace Josh Bell.
But they sent him to the minors.
Yes, they did.
That's so much.
Which I laughed at and was not expecting. But that was funny. So the Padres, in addition to getting Juan Soto and Josh Bell, also got Josh Hader from the Brewers, which I don't think anyone was expecting. It's like, Brewers, what are you doing exactly?
The Brewers definitely do not know what they're doing.
The Brewers have no idea what they're doing, I don't think. They traded
future president David Stearns in charge over there.
They traded. So the Brewers traded the only closer that you could even put in the same tier as Edwin Diaz, potentially, for the Padres closer, but is a clear downgrade and prospects.
Nelson Lamette, who then they DFA'd.
That was wild. Like during the game today, Michael was like, the Brewers just the Brewers just DFA'd Dillinson Lamet, and I was like, excuse me? Okay, sure.
A little early to be drinking, Brewers.
Whatever. I don't know. I don't understand it. Meanwhile, the other notable trades, the Yankees also had a very good trade deadline. They got Benintendi. That was like before the day of the deadline. And then they also got Frankie Montas, Harrison Bader, and a pair of relievers. They did trade away Joey Gallo, who all the Yankees fans hated because he wasn't playing well. But they
he had the saddest quote I've ever seen. It was just an interview where they asked, like, you know, is it basically said, like, is it as bad in, you know, on the streets as it is in the ballpark? And he's like, I don't go out in the streets.
I don't want to, like, he basically like implied that he like doesn't go out because people will yell.
Like, he doesn't leave his home.
Which like is a moment to remind everybody, please do not ever hassle a baseball player or any human in public because you do not like how well they are playing baseball. Like, Jesus Christ, please don't do that. A Yankee.
Look, horrible, I'm never going to like Darren Ruff, but I'll just stay quiet when he's
about. But obviously, I think most Yankees fans were probably thrilled to be rid of Joey Gallo, but they were not thrilled to part with Jordan Montgomery, who they traded. I think that the Yankees, like, this all happened like right before the deadline. This was in the flurry right before the deadline. The Yankees had been in on Marlins Pablo Lopez. The Marlins kind of went into sell mode because they said that they were listening to everyone not named Sandy Alcantara. The Marlins did actually trade away like two of their bullpen arms to the Jays, I think. So the Yankees were reportedly in on Pablo Lopez and like really trying to close that deal. And I think that they traded Jordan Montgomery because they thought that they were going to get Pablo Lopez, and then they didn't get Pablo Lopez. So the Yankees fans were kind of pissed about that. So they made their rotation sort of worse, although they did get Frankie Montas, who's really good, but like they traded another arm to get him. So it's kind of like, when I think the plan was to get like two arms. So the Yankees are kind of like, you know, in that situation, but they did get a lot of other good players. So the Yankees are improved. Yeah. Like we said earlier in the show, it's like really frustrating. The Mets kind of half-assed this because the Yankees have a way bigger division lead than the Mets have. And they did better at the deadline than the Mets did.
The good teams always do.
Yep.
Like, when was the last time we saw like a consistent, you know, strong team hit the deadline, like a good, well-run team that wins a lot? How many times have we seen those kinds of teams just, you know, take it easy at the deadline? Never, because they're always looking to get better and better, because those marginal wins matter so much when you're really on the cusp of something big.
And I was hoping so much that the Yankees would whiff because Luis Castillo, the most coveted pitching prize at the deadline went to the Seattle Mariners, which was very cool. And so it was like, oh, that, and that's the guy the Yankees really wanted, I think. And so I was like, ha ha ha, Yankees whiffed on their guy. But then, of course, being the New York Yankees, they went after the second best guy available and got him instead.
Imagine having a backup plan. Imagine that.
Imagine.
And I know Sandy Alderson used to know how to have backup plans.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Oh, can I just say, can I just say this was such a Sandy Alderson ass deadline? It was clearly 100%. Like, I'm going to give Billy Epler a ton of shit for what he said because, you know, he said it. But I think that this was like Sandy Alderson pulling the puppet strings here. 100%.
Look at what Epler has done with Mike Trout. He doesn't have a great track record with this.
No, not really.
So I'm like, I can't give him the benefit of the doubt either.
I can't. But the way that the way the leaks went down, it was so obviously Sandy stuff. The like, oh, all the prices are too high. Oh, we might just like 30 minutes, but desperation 30 minutes before the trade deadline leaking that you might promote Francisco Alvarez. That was so obviously them trying to get the Cubs to blink on Contreras because they were like, oh, look, we don't need a catcher. We swear. Ha ha ha. We'll just promote our top prospect. And then like 30 seconds after the trade deadline, it was like, oh, we're not promoting Francisco Alvarez. Like openly admitting that was a lie.
Yeah. Well, that's I mean, it's just like, and that whole idea of let me sit down and teach you about marginal wins.
Yeah,
like that was very, and I think what's frustrating for me about Billy Epler is I feel like he is in one moment a mouthpiece for Sandy Alderson and in another moment a mouthpiece for Steve Cohen, and that it's just like the angel and the devil on his shoulders, like, and I don't even know, like, what is he even doing here? Like, what's his deal?
I don't know.
Like I said, if you were serious, there wouldn't be a price. You would have just paid whatever. And then you just sign whoever next year. There should be no price that's out of your range right now if you were actually serious about going for it. I mean, Preller didn't care. He emptied the farm.
Yeah, he did.
Seriously.
I mean, like, would I have traded Francisco Alvarez for rental? Probably not. But like,
no, like maybe Ohtani next year, sure.
Oh yeah, like you save those chips being Beatty and Alvarez. You save those chips for like a Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani, Rafael Devers, that level of player. Like that's what those chips are for. We're not trying to advocate for like trading like Francisco Alvarez for like David Robertson. That was never going to be a thing.
Or like Trey Mancini.
Yeah, but like. They're trying to the way it's more the way that they were being precious about Mark Vientos that pissed me off the most, because it's just like either he's super important to prospect hug and he should have been the DH the whole time, or he's not, or he's expendable. And then you should have just traded him for Wilson Contreras. Like, pick one.
Well, the part that really makes me feel like this is a very Sandy situation is that it just is impossible to not feel like we're being lied to, or I mean, lied to, but it every single second feels like obfuscation. And like, you should be able to do your job without deceiving every minute of every day. Like, I get that, like, he used to be a lawyer and, you know, and there is, you know, a lot of chess games going on in baseball, and you can't be 100% open with your plan every minute. But like, it's the polar opposite of that. It's that every single sentence out of his mouth feels like absolute bullshit. And it's just really exhausting and annoying.
Yes, I agree. Before we move on to walk-off wins, there is one more thing I want to mention. That made yesterday kind of a giant bummer. After, you know, the trade deadline happened, we had DeGrom, which was like a momentary serotonin boost. And then, like, obviously that game went very poorly, but then get home from the game and find out that baseball has lost one of its most important figures, and that is Vin Scully.
All-timer.
Vin Scully passed away last night, and it was just absolutely heartbreaking. Like, I know that he was primarily a Dodgers broadcaster, but he's just the most important baseball broadcaster of all time. And like pretty much one of the most important baseball figures of all time, period. Player, broadcaster, manager, anybody. If you love baseball, you have listened to Vin Scully's voice tell stories about your favorite team. And it's just, it sucks. It's just like, we lost an icon. It's heartbreaking.
Anyway, it's really, I think, to make a little bit of a Mets connection, you know, and he has it, he didn't say as much, but like, Gary Cohen is not Gary Cohen if he doesn't have Vin Scully's inspiration there. Like what he, the way he kind of turned calling a game into like an art form, and not just an art, but like an emotionally meaningful and intelligent, like just the way that we love how Gary Cohen calls a game. Like Vin Scully invented that.
Yes.
And yes. I think that's especially for all you kids out there, that wasn't there before Vin Scully made it.
Like ultimately what sets baseball apart from a lot of other sports is that you like sit down to watch a ball game and you really feel like you're spending an evening with those broadcasters and they're telling you a story about the game. And that's what Vin Scully did. That's the art he perfected.
Yeah. No one better.
And there's never going to be any, like all your favorite broadcasters. We're even going beyond like the Gary Keiths and Rons of the world, but like all of the other great broadcasters that exist now exist because of Vin Scully. He's been the inspiration for all of it.
Because he got his start in radio. I mean, he predated TV, so he had to paint a picture with words, and that was just, and he kept it even with TV. That's what he did. And
when Gary was even saying in the broadcast today that it was really extolling the way he would do both.
Yeah.
At the same time, which is truly, and I know it, I've witnessed it happen, and I still cannot wrap my mind around that idea.
He's like the only one,
baseball and radio, video and radio simultaneously.
The only one capable of that, really, to toe the line between saying enough to paint the picture for those listening to the words only, and also letting the game breathe and speak for itself in the moments that it needs to for TV. Just he's the only one that's able to toe that line so expertly to be able to do both at the same time. I know that SNY showed it. And obviously on a day when I am not exactly willing to give the Nationals organization any credit for anything, given the fact that they've just traded their franchise player in the most cynical, horrible way possible. But I will give them credit for the Vin Scully tribute they did before the game today, because it was very good. Definitely made me choke up a little bit. It was very good.
And for me too, like, you know, the Fordham alumnus connection too. Like
absolutely.
He paved the way for so many other broadcasters who have come out of Fordham now. And he literally created like he set the standard. And now that we've had Michael Kay is one. But you know, there's been so many others now and again who wouldn't be there if it hadn't been for him.
Yeah, so
very special.
R.I.P. to a legend, Vin Scully.
But I there was one thing, like they're always trying to, you know, professors try to like inspire their students, and so we watched he was not my speaker, which I was hoping he would be, or Denzel Washington, and I didn't get either, but I guess he had given a speech one year, so we got to see the tape of him giving the commencement speech to the students. And the one line that stood out to me was he quoted J.M. Barrie and said, "God gave us memories so we could have roses in December." And that's what he did. He gave us roses in the bad times, and that's what he did, and he did it for so long. And you know, it's, I saw somebody else tweet that, you know, he just seemed like one of those immortal dudes that just always would be there. And that's kind of what it felt like.
There's so many baseball fans, multiple generations of them, who have never known like a baseball world without Vin Scully's voice in it. And now we have to kind of figure out what that looks like. So,
and I always swore that the Simpsons broadcaster was always based on him, because it's clearly it's Hank Azaria doing the voice. So whenever the Simpsons had a baseball episode, it was totally based on Vin Scully. The way they drew him, the way Hank Azaria did his voice, like, it was perfect.
Yeah, I just don't know if there is like not only a more iconic voice in baseball, but a more iconic voice in sports, period, than Vin Scully. So it's sad to lose him, but we will always have those roses. We will always have those highlights that he narrated for so long. So at least there's that. But in the meantime, we will end the show this week like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So related to my firstborn's 8th birthday, we were finally dragged kicking and screaming to the American Dream Mall water park.
Oh my God.
And it was awesome, you guys. I hate how much fun we had, in part because it is like appallingly expensive. Like, Jesus Christ. But it was great. It was so, like, it's huge. It was indoors, so we didn't have any stress about weather. And you know, the upside of the price tag is that, like, there was no, you know, there's no like ride tickets. Once you're in, you're in. They were open 11 to 7. And the kids are like, I want to stay 3 hours. I want to stay 5 hours. And there's no, like, I mean, I didn't have my phone on me because it's wet and all that. And so at one point I looked at my phone and I was like, wow, I can't believe it's almost 3 o'clock. And then we went off and had more fun. I was like, guys, sometime soon we'll think about whatever. The next thing I hear is that they're getting ready to close. And I was like, that's so weird. I really thought they closed at 7, but they must close at 5. No, it was 6:40. We were there for 8 hours. We closed the club down. Like,
amazing.
It was real. And I think that really kind of says it all, that we just got very sucked into the whole thing. And it was a blast. Thomas and I rode did the slide that starts at like the tippy top. Like, it's not even as high as the ceiling. They like built out an extra portion of the ceiling to go higher. And it's a sheer drop. You stand in this tube and the floor falls out from under you. And 5 seconds later, you're on the ground. And I can't believe we did it. I can't believe he did it. He's a kid. And he was so, both the kids were just such ballers about the whole thing. It was great. Everyone had so much fun. And I actually feel like we sort of got our money's worth because we were there for 8 hours. But like, yeah. If you want to do something nice with the fam, or just like, I think it is definitely, I think grownups would have a good time there too. You know, it's just nice. It was very like well run. When one of my children got a little overly ambitious, the lifeguards were right there. And that happened very quickly. So yay. And you know, they got food and you can get like locker rentals and buy this and that. Like it was a really nice spot. And you know, a celebration for Thomas's birthday. It was very long awaited and I had a really good time. So yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, I'm glad that the place that took so long to build, it became a meme, is actually worth it in the end.
Yeah.
Linda Cervich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Can you just skip me? I don't have one.
we can skip you. That's fine.
I abstain.
So, my walk-off win for this week is that Thomas Henderson and Jack McClune, two fellow Amazing Avenue writers, came down to visit Michael and I this week to see the Mets and the Nationals, to see Max Scherzer on Monday and Jacob DeGrom the following day. And they came on Saturday, so we kind of had like a little bit of the weekend before the games to just hang out and do DC things. We had a fantastic time. And it was just really, really nice to have them here, and get to go to games together. It was really fun, even though they only won one of the two games, but it was still awesome to see Jake's return. You can only see that once. So that was really great. Yeah, it was just a really fun weekend all around. Took them around the Capitol grounds. We did a lot of walking, to and from the games. We played video games. We got drunk and watched Glee. It was just fantastic. it was a great weekend. And it was a pleasure having Thomas and Jack here. They should come down more. So yeah, that does it for the show this week. You can go to AmazingAvenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. We have all the trade analysis for you over at Amazing Avenue of the deadline. You don't just have to take like our words for it. You can read more words of others about the Mets trade deadline. We've got weekly meters, we've got game recaps, we've got daily news posts, all of that for you. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this show on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servage.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro to this music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets, and don't forget, there is no crying in podcasts.